You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Tuesday, June 13th, 2017, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning, alongside the fantasy executive Corey Parson, the King Scott Angle, and CTM Baseball's Matt Modica. I am Greg Sussman. Happy Tuesday to you all. It is a celebration Tuesday for you, Corey Parson, decked out in your Warriors gear, because Golden State, as some of us on this panel predicted, me, have won in five games. Congratulations, Corey.
Yeah, shout out to all the Dub Nation and all of their fans for many years now.
Yes, yeah. Many,
I don't know
many
why
years.
Congratulating a Knicks fan for the Warriors.
Well, you look at him; he doesn't look like a Knicks fan to me. He's all Warriors here.
No, that's not a real Golden State Warrior fan.
Corey, you know what?
Mike Florio said that you've been a Warriors fan from day one, and he's right. Since day one of the playoffs, you're rooting
for. Very funny, Scotty.
Yeah,
there you go. Scott the King Angle, sir, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very good. It was a good night for New York baseball as well. Oh, Jacob DeGrom got back in form last night, and Aaron Judge hitting a very interesting go-ahead homer last night, now leading the majors with 22.
Why was it interesting?
It was dramatic home run, number one.
Sure.
And number two, I don't know if you saw the game, he grew up about 400 miles north of where the Angels play, and there was a huge turnout of people coming to support Judge, and it was like Yankee Stadium West last night.
I love how you're like,
the crowd went crazy.
If I saw the game, this was like at midnight. You were tucked in bed during this part of the game.
No, but I caught a lot of the highlights this morning.
The extensive highlights.
Yeah. Extensive highlights.
Yeah, so make fun of me for a show.
Well,
right?
You were like, I don't know if you caught the game. I'm like, neither did you.
I don't know but I caught the highlights. Did you?
Of course I did. It's the Yankees.
I watched the Mets and then I went to bed. Right.
Whatever.
I don't know if you're listening to Bieber or watching the game, but my point is that
it was like
there were so many fans there in support of Judge. It was very emotional. Well, it was kind of cool.
He's the best. What's going on, Matty Mo?
Well, it's a terrific Tuesday. Going to try and stay cool. It's pretty damn hot already.
It is very hot outside already.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? For once.
You know what's interesting? If you live in New York, you never have to listen to the weather report.
Right.
Because that Modica always starts out with the weather.
Well, it's an important fact.
Yeah. It is an important fact. That's why we don't have meteorologists on staff.
Yeah, you don't have to watch the news. It's like you could talk about politics. It'll be the weather. We got it all here.
He could also talk about politics. and my version of politics would be very different than Matt's version of politics.
For sure.
On the program today, we will not be talking politics. Instead, we got a lot of baseball to get to, a lot of football. Name that player returns, and we'll get into the NBA championship in a little bit. But when we come back, talk about some baseball from last night, because as good as Aaron Judge was, there were some injuries we have to get to as well. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and of course, live on TV on the Fantasy Sports Network as well. We'll be back right after this. This is Sue Princess, by the way. Fantastic attention to detail.
What happened?
Bona. This is we talked about.
I like this groove.
Oh.
Yeah, this is this is the Spin Doctors.
Yeah, I remember this.
Okay, so you're on this. All right, there you go. We're back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're going to get to some injuries in a moment. But Corey's just commenting. He said, man, you guys are hardcore. Like, watching baseball the night of the NBA championship. Game 5, clinching game. And Corey's like, listen, I was locked in on Foltynewicz in Strasburg because that game was early. He's got some players in there, and so he's got that going on. So I was just saying how I'm watching the Mets because I had Jake DeGrom on my team, and I wanted to see him kind of come back. And he did. He pitched really, really well last night. Complete game. Only run allowed was a solo shot. Had like a billion double plays, which scares the crap out of me, but fine. nevertheless, got through it, and it was great. So I'm flipping back and forth between that. And now, embarrassingly enough, the thing I was flipping back and forth, back and forth with at that time, remember, that game started at 7. The Warriors didn't start till 9.
Yeah,
was the MLB draft.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Because I wanted to see who the Yankees pick. Not that I know who the guy is.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see the Yankees pick. Like, oh, I can get excited about this guy.
I got an alert on my phone. They made a pick.
Do you know what they did this team? The New York Yankees? How cocky they are right now? Aaron Judge, 22 home runs, leads the league. The average runs, all this stuff. You know how cocky this team is right now?
What?
They took a dude that had Tommy John last month.
Last month?
Yeah.
So he's not even going to be ready till next year this time.
Right.
If that.
And be ready to start his minor league career.
Yeah.
Next year.
Who's kid Cincinnati got? Because he throws like 102.
We'll get to Hunter Green. I'll get to Hunter Green in a moment. But the Yankees, can you believe this team? And you look at that Tommy John, a guy that was ranked 50, and they took him 16th overall.
They're not looking to win now. If it happens, it happens. If not, they're sticking to the program. They got the plan. They got the patience. Trust the process. You feel what I'm saying,
there
Scotty?
There are so many guys who have had like Tommy John in the minors, so I really don't think it's a big deal if they really think the kid's that talented and they wait a year or two for him.
I agree with Scott. I mean, it's become a trend now. A lot of teams are taking these kids that either recently had Tommy John, they're going on, I guess, with their projectability, their upside. So it is very interesting.
Who is the kid that Minnesota drafted, number one?
Royce, name? I forget his last name, Royce something or something like that?
Yes.
He's already been labeled a bust. Somebody compared him to Byron Buxton.
Well, Byron Buxton, that's not a bust. Byron Buxton starts in the MLB.
But what's his batting average?
Well, they...
But who cares? At least he made it to the MLB. There's first round picks that have never made it.
I'm not talking about in comparison to somebody who plays weekend softball. I'm talking about Byron Buxton hasn't done
emotional
crap.
He's done more. He's done more than Mark Appel, who's number one overall pick, and never made it to the majors.
So that guy's a bust too, right?
He's more of a bust than Byron Buxton, who starts in center field for a first place team.
But the guy that went fourth overall.
I don't want to be compared to Byron Buxton.
I do. I mean, I'd love to be.
I thought Hunter Green was going to go first. But the guy who went fourth overall, who's a first baseman / left-handed pitcher, he was supposedly the guy that was supposed to go one.
The legal guy, right?
I forget. All he right. was supposed to go first overall, but I think he wanted more money.
Right.
So the Twins decided to go that route.
Right.
Yeah, Hunter Green's really impressive. That kid throws 102.
Yeah, but Hunter Green also has contract issues. He's committed to UCLA at the moment. We'll see if Cincinnati can get him out of that. He wanted to go to San Diego, closer to his home, who had the third pick. Didn't happen. Hunter Green was on the cover of Sports Illustrated a couple of weeks ago.
They say he's like the hardest throwing, amateur kid like in years.
But is that good? Like, would I want high school kid throwing 100? Because I think he's gonna blow out his arm before he gets to me.
They said he's got a good curve too.
I feel like he's gonna blow out his arm before he gets to me.
Yeah, but he's supposed to be a good offensive player too.
He played some shortstop too. Right?
I mean, the player I'm most excited to see next season is that kid from Japan.
Oh, Ohtani. Ohtani, who do the same thing as Hunter Green. He's older. We'll see if he comes over. He's costing himself money. I was reading.
Yeah, but I think he's gonna make so much money here on endorsements and back in Japan. So I mean, I think at certain points you want to reach the highest status.
Sure. So the point I was trying to make with the Yankees pick, because it seemed like they reached for this kid who had Tommy John literally in April. And so I was reading about him, and he was like, Peter Gammons immediately called him a number two or three starter. I'm like, 16 overall. And this guy, basically, you're drafting a guy that had Tommy John. I get it, right? Like, everyone has Tommy John. It's not that big of a deal anymore. But like, wouldn't you rather have a guy that didn't have it yet? Like, why am I thinking a guy that's already been hurt? Like, the best precursor for injury is prior injury.
Could they have waited
it?
Another round to I think
so, but who knows?
I did see something on Twitter with the Dodgers. I think it was Bill Shakin who tweeted it out. The front office doesn't mind Tommy John. They took another guy that had Tommy John.
Right.
So I don't think that's like scaring people off, obviously.
I mean, you're not going to expect the guy to play in the majors next year, so you can wait for him to heal.
I guess so.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some major league players rather than these minor league guys that we're never going to hear of for the next 6 years. It's crazy. Like 8 years ago in that draft, so the 2009 draft, it's all these guys that are like finally come alive here in 2017, from like Yonder Alonso to Aaron Hicks.
Like Taillon pitched last night. He was a number one pick in 2010.
So there you go. And it's a long time later already. You know, it's 7 years ago. So
yeah, but some of these guys are lifetime like coming up quick. Like
Sure, of course. Yeah. Of course. All right, let's get to some injuries from last night. For that, we want to bring in Jeff the Skeleton. if we had music, you know, Jeff the Skeleton, the theme music for Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. So this is my homie Jeff. He used to be a quarterback in the NFL. Now he's a skeleton.
That's right. It's why he doesn't have a brain, because we donated it. We donated to the Sports Legacy Institute.
Yeah, we had to donate Jeff's brains, figure out what's causing this, all of this CTE. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. So nevertheless,
CTE.
We bring in Jeff here, and that is because Chris Davis left last night's ball game for the Orioles with a potential strained oblique muscle. Now, we know the oblique.
Right oblique.
Strained right oblique muscle. Yes. Thank you. And we know the oblique, especially for power hitters, is bad because it keeps you out for like 5 weeks, give or take, depending on the player, depending on the severity of the injury. So, Corey, if you could describe where that oblique muscle is. We'll talk to Dr. Ray about it tomorrow, of course. But given the oblique muscle, how did he hurt it? Why did he hurt it? And how long is it going to cost Chris
Davis?
This
is a very common injury that you'll see with baseball players, particularly, like you mentioned, Greg, with power hitters. Obviously, your oblique is in this area of the abdomen. And obviously, it comes from the consistent motion of swinging a bat. Once you get that, it's this very common injury.
Well, he actually hurt himself swinging the bat last night.
There you go, right there. So he probably felt like some tightness. It probably was bothering him for a couple days now or so. So he probably took a nice, good hack last night. And he was like, okay, I need to come out the game because my oblique is really bothering me. So this area right here from that constant torquing of the body, and that's what's happened to Chris Davis. Not twerking, Scott. No. Torquing.
I understand, Scott. I understand.
Scott, you can't go in the daytime today. So this that constant torque motion of the body strains your oblique for a power hitter. This is like what? I would think this is a 3 to 4 week thing.
I think like five.
Yeah,
five
like
weeks.
4 to 6.
To get fully healthy and get back to playing, because you want it to heal up, because Chris Davis being a big time power hitter, the big fella, he's going to want to be able to lift the ball out the ballpark, and that's why the oblique is very important. So you can be looking at, you probably won't see him till well after the All-Star break.
Let me ask you, and I'm sure Greg was going to cover this next probably. Jonas Cespedes came back too early from the hamstring.
Again.
He was limping around the bases on Saturday when he had a grand slam. Last night he leaves the game with what they call left heel tendonitis.
So I was gonna start the next segment with that because I had a bit of a rant. So I'm gonna do that, and Corey, you know, you can.
We're going to leave Jeff here?
No, you can leave Jeff here. I'm turning
Jeff.
Jeff
not going to stand by himself no more. Somebody broke Jeff.
Unbelievable.
When we went over the weekend, somebody broke Jeff. I don't know what they was doing with Jeff.
So I hope they
wasn't being fresh with Jeff.
You can take that heel.
Yeah.
But
nasty.
We call out the Mets a lot here.
Put them down.
For being incompetent and being remarkably stupid. And Dr. Ray said, listen, it's not the doctor's fault. It's the front office, or it's the manager, or it's whoever's making the decision to play these unhealthy
guys. They get the information from the
medical staff, and they choose to use the information however they see fit. However, the Mets continue to be, here in June, we've talked about every pitcher they brought back outside of Steven Matz and Seth Lugo, who they actually gave time to rehab properly. They have been the most incompetent organization in sports when it comes to injury, and you know what? They prove it time and time and time again. Yoenis Cespedes comes off the DL and he tells a reporter, I am not 100% yet. He played in one rehab game, got hurt. Sits for a week, plays another rehab game, like, okay, you're ready now. He's like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, yeah, you are. Plays one game, is super sore, hits a grand slam, is super sore, has to, obviously was not playing the second game of a doubleheader, has to pinch hit the next day. He's fine for Monday night. Well, you know what? He obviously is not, because he had to get pulled for Monday night because he hurt his heel, which is, according to the Mets, who not a soul believe, it's completely unrelated to the quad and the hamstring.
Oh, that's right. Come on. Are these people crazy?
Another leg injury. He'll be back in the lineup today. Yeah, he'll be back in the lineup today. You know what's going to happen today, Scotty? He's going to get pulled or scratched because he's not healthy. This is a team that is entirely desperate. They reek of desperation, and it is pathetic what they are doing to their best player. They are ruining him. They just gave him a 5-year, $100 million contract, and they are going to cost themselves money because they are incompetent. It's mind-boggling. If you're a Yoenis Cespedes owner, you should feel miserable that he's on the Mets, because they are the stupidest organization in sports. We'll break it down and bring back Jeff right after this.
That was wonderful.
Sorry. I was so angry.
Hi, I'm Brandon Maurer, and you're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
As I mentioned, if you are a Yoenis Cespedes owner, you should be livid that this player plays for the Mets, because this is the worst run organization in sports when it comes to injuries. They lie repeatedly, and they simply do not care about their players.
It's so obvious that this latest injury for Cespedes comes because...
Talking about Jeff for that?
Well, we don't even need Jeff for this one right here.
Okay.
The injury comes from him compensating for the injuries that they won't let heal properly.
Correct.
So he's getting out there compensating for one injury, and it's causing stress and strain to another area, and that's why he's limping. Let the man sit and heal till after the damn All-Star break. What are they doing, Scott? What's going on? Matika, help me out with this. What are we doing? Scott, you at the damn ballpark once a week. Can somebody figure this out?
Nobody figures it out. Dr. A figured it out already. He told us last week that the medical staff makes the determinations, and in the organization, right now the Mets feel like they're in a pivotal stretch. You know, they're playing the Cubs this week and the Nationals this week, and they're in a pivotal stretch right now, and they feel like they need Cespedes, and they're making a mistake of pushing him too early.
Well, they did that same thing back in, what, the end of April? Or I know it was a Thursday afternoon game. They had the Nationals on deck that weekend. They were sliding, you know, back already early, so they got nervous. They put Cespedes in the game that Thursday. Instead of DLing him, he already sat out like five games. And he limped off the field that time. And, you know, it's just, it's definitely not the doctors. I you know, the people that make the decisions are the front office. The front office has the ultimate say to when the players are going to come back.
So now, you're absolutely correct. Like, so you say you got the Cubs coming in this week, right? Scott, you going to the ballpark this week?
Tomorrow.
Matt, you going down to the ballpark this week?
Not this week.
Okay, but the bottom line of the matter is the fans are still going to come to the game. It's the world champion Cubs. And guess what? You still got a ton of Cubs fans in New York City. They're going to be at the game. You don't need to bring all your firepower out in June. People are still going to come to the ballpark. It's the Cubs. They can sell themselves. The people are still going to be there.
It's desperation.
But they're not looking at that way as like selling tickets. They're looking at their way like they need to win these games.
They're falling far behind in the wild card. You know, they want to stay relevant. The Yankees are just like playing wonderful.
But it's been like that forever.
But this was the year.
I don't think it has anything to do with the Yankees.
Right? No, but Corey, going into the season, the Mets were supposed to be
the dominant team.
The Dollars of New York and the Yankees were the rebuild.
But you know what? The fans look at it that way. It's like the Mets are like, we have to win these games and stay alive. They're not looking at the fact that what the Yankees are doing.
You don't think it's competition for the back page, especially during the baseball season?
I don't think the Mets are.
No, Scott, they got to be. Not when they come into the season. As a team that people, they got these aces. They can make
the
a World Series run.
That way,
they had a chance to take the city over, but they have a chance.
I'm telling you that
the organization looks at it that way.
Media, the organization does not look at it that way. That's the way the fans look at it. Okay, the way the team is looking at it is this is an important stretch for us. We need to win. We have to have Cespedes out there.
So I agree. I agree with you, Scott. They're not concerned about what's going on the other side of town.
No.
They're concerned about winning and trying to stay alive and not be sellers at the deadline, right? Like if they continue on this downturn, they would ultimately be a seller at the deadline, and they needed to push, and they had a very important stretch coming up.
You know what the players' awareness of the Yankees is? Like when they're laying in the clubhouse in the afternoon, and if the Yankees are on, they'll watch them. You know,
Maybe.
If you look prior to the season, the Vegas win total had like the Nationals like 90 wins and the Mets at 88.5, which I thought was too high to begin with. Now that's like 88 wins is like a dream.
Why was that too high to begin with if you expected everybody to be healthy?
I still thought the Mets, you know, I thought the Nationals coming into the season were the better team.
Right.
I didn't think there was
and
a
Vegas
game.
Reflected that.
I didn't think it was a game and a half difference is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I didn't think the Mets were going to win that many games.
I believe, again, that this team, if you're a Yoenis Cespedes owner, what do you do? Like, you just have to deal with the Mets' idiocy?
Well, you can't trade him because other owners in your league know that the situation, you know, what you have to do is, there's really nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, I own him on several teams, and you know, what do you do? If the Mets activate him, he goes in my lineup. Yeah, you got to hope he hits.
That's all you can do.
He hits like that grand slam, like, you know, something like that.
So after that grand slam, I think I want to try to trade him immediately.
When people watch baseball,
yeah, but unless
league,
you got a bunch of rubes in your league,
limping around the bases, you know, it's going to be hard to deal him.
You're probably right. It's optimistic on my part. I don't own you on a Cespedes anywhere. Not because I didn't want him; it just didn't happen.
I mean, as a Cespedes owner, my best thing would be put him back on the DL. Don't activate him till maybe July 1st at the earliest.
Of course,
if he's healthy.
If
not,
break.
Wait till the All-Star break, and then hopefully he's fully healthy and has a big second half. I mean, we've seen him do it before.
Of course.
True.
Yeah, of course. Josh Reddick, he has a concussion, so that will keep Josh Reddick out for a couple of days. That's another. Oh my god! I forgot I have Josh Reddick too. We lost Chris Davis and Josh Reddick last night.
Yeah, Reddick tried to rob a home run last night and had a really nasty slam into the right field wall.
I literally lose players every day. This is incredible.
It's happening to a lot of people.
I've lost VR, Chris Davis, and Josh Reddick in the last 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people.
And Cody Glover.
I don't think most people, like in the NFBC.
That really him.
I think, in the NFBC, we have a 7-man bench. I mean, I have teams, and most people do, where pretty much every guy on your bench has that DL.
That's what it is.
Everybody's dealing with it, I think.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Let's be more positive, right? Mm-hmm.
Jacob DeGrom?
Let's breathe, and let's talk about the return of Jameson Taillon. Jacob DeGrom was great, and you feel good.
Jerry Colvin doesn't.
I'm sorry?
Jerry Colvin predicted that DeGrom was going to
get bombed last night. He said if he gets bombed, he'll go to DL.
Yeah.
Which he probably would have. But as good as Jacob DeGrom was, and he was excellent, as I said, we can break it down in a few, but I feel good for Jameson Taillon. Yeah. This is the dude that five weeks ago to the day yesterday was diagnosed with cancer.
It's remarkable. It really is.
Laughing at the
cancer? No, I'm laughing at something I saw on social media.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Bad time for the laugh.
But Taillon had tremendous command last night. He only went five innings, but there were five sterling innings, I felt. And he got the run support last night. Josh Harrison, his eighth home run. Yeah, the Pirates don't provide you with much run support. They had to win 175 plate appearances without a home run until Harrison is eighth early in the game. But Taillon, you know, beautiful curveball. He's a pleasure to watch when he's on, and he was on last night. The command was terrific.
It certainly was.
The good news with Taillon was that he didn't have to go for the chemo. They felt they got everything off. Because if he had to take the chemo, he would have been done for the year.
Wouldn't have the
strength. So, as you said, it really was. As a sports fan in general, as a human being, it's a great story.
It was awesome to see him come back literally just a month or so later. As long as we expect Chris Davis to be out with an oblique, that's how long it took Jameson Taillon to come back. And he returned, as Scotty mentioned, five hits, no runs, two walks, five strikeouts.
A lot of people actually cut him. They didn't expect him to come back. With those who reclaimed him. And for the Pirates fans, they haven't had a lot to cheer about this year because Gerrit Cole has been terrible. Andrew McCutchen, you know, his batting average has been way down. So it gave Pirates fans something good to feel about, too.
Well, you say that, sir. But the Pirates won 3 games in a row. And don't look now. They're only 4 games out of first place in their division. 4 games.
I think this says a lot about the division.
It certainly does. It does.
I don't expect them to continue.
I'll give every other team, I'll take the Cubs. I don't care where they are in the standings. Yeah.
I just think it's very interesting that this entire NL Central is separated by 4 games. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but the Colorado Rockies are one of the best teams in baseball right now. Yeah. I mean, as great as it's been, I still ain't buying it. I want to see the pitching go through July and August.
Well, Colorado's one of the best teams in baseball, but their division, interestingly enough, you have the Rockies, Dodgers, and Diamondbacks all separated by a game and a half. Right now, all three of those teams are in the playoffs. And then at the bottom, you have like the two worst teams in baseball in the Padres and the Giants.
And even in that division, I'll give you everybody else, and I'll take the Dodgers because, I mean, the Dodgers, Cubs, and Nationals, it's over in the National League, in my opinion. I don't see it being competitive at any point.
Fair enough. So, we keep mentioning Jake DeGrom. We yelled at the Mets and how dumb the Mets are here. But the New York Mets got a really good performance last night, of course, out of Jacob DeGrom, one they needed. And I was actually very surprised he went 9 innings here in this one because he allowed 5 hits and a run, walked a few, struck out 6, threw 116 pitches, which... I don't get why he has to throw 116 pitches.
Well, the bullpen, you know, they've been getting taxed. The Mets feel like they really want this victory. This was the first complete game by a Met at Citi Field since August of 2013. Ron Darling was saying, you know, he did everything right last night. He was keeping the ball into righties, keeping it down overall. Then after the game, he was talking about the last two starts he had not made went more than four innings. He said there was a mechanical flaw. He was flying open too much, and at this time he was locking it in, and he said his location was perfect last night. This is the DeGrom you expect to see.
I think it's an indictment on baseball that if a pitcher throws 116 innings, we got to be like concerned.
116 pitches.
Yeah, 116 pitches, excuse me. That just infuriates me to no end.
And I understand that, but the shoulders obviously have, especially with this team, are very valuable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand, but he was, you know, he had 99 pitches after eight. I wasn't. I kill Terry for a lot of things, but like Scott said, the bullpen's been getting.
I kill you for a lot of things, damn it.
Terry, relax.
You relax, golden fake warrior.
John Lackey on the other side, 5 innings, 6 hits, four runs. It's amazing that Terry has the same insults as Scott, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's very well, it's the same goddamn truth.
Terry. Well, I'm saying the same cliche line, is what I'm saying.
Terry, with your voice.
Why don't you shut up and host?
Terry's in a bad mood because his team is in last place.
Not last place. Look at the goddamn standings, you front runner.
Well, he's not to be a front runner because his team's in first place as well.
That's not his team, goddamn.
The Yankees are.
He's wearing a Walt Frazier jersey last week.
What are the Yankees? Are they in first place, Terry?
Yeah, but if they're not, then he's going to root for the goddamn Nationals.
Well, it's his National League team.
It's my National League team. They're in first
place. Why you
got
to support him? Are you his sister or something, goddammit?
I'm his friend.
I'm his bestie. Yeah.
We'll be back on the Roto Experts right after this. We're back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're hanging out here. You seem confused, Matty.
Is that vacation? What's this music?
It is. It is vacation. I don't know what that is, but...
The movie with Chevy Chase?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Sounds like a weird version of it.
Oh, it's probably not just... we don't have the money to pay for, like, the real thing. So, the thing that Corey was talking about before watching the Golden State Warriors defeat Cleveland Cavaliers in five games was Mike Foltynewicz against Steven Strasburg. And Foltynewicz responded a 3-0 lead. You're like, okay, Folty, just keep doing what you're doing, bro. And instead, it was a disaster because he struck out zero batters. He allowed 8 runs on 11 hits, a couple of walks. And one of the home runs was to Bryce Harper. Another home run was to Trey Turner. And then this Goodwin guy also had a home run.
Yeah, Brian Goodwin.
Correct.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, the Atlanta Braves defeated Washington 11-10 in 9 innings. Why? Because of blown save by Matt Albers. Because the Nats still haven't traded for a closer. They just called up some dude, right? Like, they just called up somebody who I assume is going to be their closer tomorrow, right? It has to be. Dusty Baker's going to lose his effing mind.
Yeah, they were talking to Dusty after the game, and he was very frustrated. He said, you know, we're seeing too many crooked numbers up there in the late innings. Right now, the Nationals, more than any team in baseball, they've blown 6 leads when they've led by multiple runs in the eighth inning or later. And, you know, I was talking with Tony about it this morning, and Tony says, well, you know, they're still 9 games ahead. It's not going to like that they're going to rush and make a move, which is a good point. But, you know, I think Dusty's going to lose it if they don't. And the Nationals were completely frustrated because last night Jim Johnson faced Bryce Harper with the game on the line. And when Harper flew out, he went to the dugout and he kicked the corner of the dugout. He cursed and he threw his batting glove. So this late inning frustration is really starting to eat at the Nationals.
What the thing about it is, we know what postseason baseball, Washington Nationals are going to be in the postseason. We know what postseason baseball is. Clutch hitting and good bullpen play. And the Washington Nationals, if they're not going to win a championship or even get to the World Series unless they fix this bullpen problem. So the regular season is kind of irrelevant to them right now when it comes to what's going to happen with this bullpen, but they got to get it figured out. I think something's going to happen before the trade deadline. between the All-Star break and the trade deadline because they can't continue to go on like this.
But here's the truth, right? Last year, the Cubs traded Gleyber Torres and a lot more, to be honest with you, for Aroldis Chapman. And then Gleyber Torres is now the second best prospect in baseball, probably now the top prospect in baseball. And the Cubs, I was talking about this with my friend over the weekend, the Cubs don't regret that for a second. They traded the top prospect in baseball away for Aroldis Chapman.
They got a championship.
And they got a championship. And they do not regret that for a second. No. The Cleveland Indians traded their top prospect away for Andrew Miller, and they made the World Series. And you know what? They don't regret that for a second because it worked out perfectly.
They came
Nationals need to do whatever they need to do, whatever prospect it takes. I do not care who it is, whoever Kansas City is asking for Kelvin Herrera, whoever Tampa Bay is asking for Alex Colomay, whatever, whoever, it does not matter. You trade them away because it does not matter. You are losing games every single day because of your inability to close ball games. Cody Glover, Sean Kelly, Matt Albers, Joe Nathan, I don't care. Whoever it is not getting the job done in Washington. Make a move before this is costing you even more.
And you look at Foltynewicz, too, last night. That was very disappointing because he had two strong starts before that. And this is the problem with Foltynewicz. It's like every once in a while he's having a blow-up. And let's not forget about Matt Adams with the two home runs last night. He has 8 home runs in 22 games as an Atlanta Brave.
I'll get to Matt Adams in just a second because I think Matt Adams is a good conversation. But sticking with this closer situation, you have said, Matt, when it comes to the Yankees, right? Like, they should go out and make a trade now. Make a trade for a starter before it heats up and before the deadline comes. And I've kind of been conservative about that. And, you know, I think it's almost warranted. Like, the Yankees are winning ballgames. Their starters are pitching really well. Even Tanaka, like, pitched well for the most part last night. And I think they have an ability, an affordability, just kind of see the market set itself a little bit. The Nationals lose game after game after game after game in the ninth inning. This is a team, after watching what Cleveland and Chicago did last year, knowing exactly that they're going to have to face Chicago and Los Angeles when it comes down to October, they need to make the move before, you know what, Chicago and Los Angeles do.
Yeah, I mean, I think after Cody Glover was placed on the DL, I would have made a call to the Pirates and inquired about Juan Nicasio. Not that he's the solution or their closure rest of the season, but he's somebody that could give them more than an inning in that bullpen. For now, maybe he could be the interim closer for them. He's better than what they have in that bullpen. It's been a total disaster. And, I mean, look, the Nationals do have a luxury right now. Being in the National League East affords them a luxury. Something is going to happen. They are going to make a trade. I just don't think they're going to trade Victor Robles. Like you say, do whatever it takes. I don't think he's getting traded. The one thing I will say about the Cubs giving up Torres was they got Aroldis Chapman, who is, if not one, he's number two. You know what I'm saying? So if they were getting like a Kenley Jansen's back, then maybe I could see trading Robles.
Okay.
I try and do everything besides that in their power to get that. And as I've said many times, they do need multiple arms.
But I don't think like Victor, it's costing Victor Robles to go get out, to go get the guys, Colomay, Herrera,
Well,
Robinson.
That's going to be the first guy that is going to be mentioned.
Here's the thing, you know, talking to somebody close to the White Sox during the offseason, they wanted Robertson, and the talks kept breaking off to the point where they just weren't speaking anymore. So, you know, you can only speculate as to why, you know, maybe the White Sox were asking for Robles and Washington wasn't budging. It's just like, maybe Washington is not going to budge with just anything, you know, to get this closer.
What's interesting last night, I mean, as you mentioned about Faulty, he got blown up and stuff, but he's been pitched. He's done a good job, in my opinion, for the pitcher that I expected.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Look, he's playing the Nationals. They are one of the best offensive teams in baseball. So I'll give him the pick. Strasburg, interestingly enough, gave up 3 homers. He had given up 6 all season prior to that. And in Strasburg's last 5 starts, including last night, has a K per 9 over 14, a walks per 9 under 2. So, I mean, if I just want to see Strasburg pitch 200-plus innings this year as a baseball fan and see what his final stats can end up being.
And if you're a Trey Turner owner, he went yard last night, too.
Yeah, we mentioned that. You talked about Matt Adams, his 2 home runs last night. I've always been a Matt Adams supporter. I just wanted the dude to play every day, and he got himself in shape and didn't get the opportunity until he came to Atlanta playing in there for Freddie Freeman. And as Scott said, 8 home runs in 22 games here with the Atlanta Braves. It's just a really, really awesome performance from Matt Adams.
Yeah, you didn't think they were going to be able to replace Freeman, but this guy supplied some nice power.
Yeah.
That ballpark suits him perfectly. Right center, yep. Right field. Seems to be like a little launching pad out there. So
very good job by them going out and getting a player that they knew would fit well for their ballpark.
It's a great point. It's a great point. If they're signing James Loney in the minor league contract, they didn't stop, right? Like, they went out and got a player that fit their ballpark and fit their team well. And Matt Adams is at least providing some of the power that they lost to Freddie Freeman.
The Braves are doing it right now.
Yeah, they are.
And I'm going to go out here on a little tangent. But just ride with me here. It's like they knew they were getting a new ballpark. They might have the most rich farm system in the National League, right? But they knew they were opening up a new ballpark, and they put a competitive team there as well. And plus, they got this really new cool promotion I was talking with Tony about.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've seen it. Just Google it.
Balk at the park.
No, this guy that they call the Freeze. They dress him up. And like he's like this track star or something like that. They dress him up in like this ice colored uniform. They bring him out in the seventh inning on the warning track. They tell every fan, "We're going to give you a head start, and you're going to race the Freeze."
Not every fan,
If you beat him, you're going to win a big prize.
It's a significant head start.
Significant head start, and the guy always beats him.
This one kid on Saturday had his arms up like he was going to win, and he was like really close to the finish line.
Yeah, and,
and then he looks and he sees the Freeze, and then he falls on his face. It was pretty awesome.
All covered with dirt.
It was hysterical.
But real quick, like he said about you guys mentioned they signed James Loney, and then went out and got Matt Adams. The Mets would have had signed James Loney. James Loney in the lineup.
Correct. That's what they did last year. So, like, we have seen that before by the Mets. By the way, the Nationals should just go trade for Mark Melancon. I know Scott's been saying that the Giants fall out, Melancon could be available. Just go trade for Melancon again. Just do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wouldn't want to take
the Giants are
going to
be sellers.
Correct. Just do it again.
That's what I was told.
I would want the Giants to take a huge portion of
it. You know what? The Nationals can afford it.
Yeah, but they're paying a lot of players right now.
Hasn't Melancon blown like three saves this year, though?
Yeah, he's not the guy I'm most.
I don't care. I feel like he's not. Nationals have blown 40.
No, but I feel like he's not locked down.
Who do you want them to go get then?
I like Colomé.
Herrera.
Even Herrera,
go after Colomé. Like,
Herrera's blown a couple saves also.
But I'd like to see him in the National League.
Robertson's been there in the big city doing it. He's got good solid mentality.
Melancon's got a solid mentality too. He did a nice job for Washington last year.
He's blown a few key ones this year.
But so is Robertson. All these guys.
The one thing I will say about Melancon that scares me: he's older. He's like late 30s, and his margin of error is that window is small. He's not like a guy that's going to hit.
He's 32. He's not late 30s. Yeah,
I thought he was older than that.
He's 32 years old. I think he's a guy.
I don't think. He doesn't
throw hard enough.
Sure.
If he loses a mile an hour and stuff,
it's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. And he got 3 years?
Robertson's got that nifty stuff that moves around.
All right, fair enough. What about going after, like, you're not going to like this option. What about going to, like, Oakland? They got a bunch of guys, like Santiago Casillas.
No.
Right?
No.
That's not a...
AJ Ramos?
I mean, I wouldn't want to give up a lot.
He's too scary in the late innings.
He's better than what they have.
He'll be in the NLCS and he'll load the bases with like no outs.
And then you bring Cody Glover.
There you go.
Grand slam.
Get Nicasio and wait for Glover to come back.
God. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the baseball conversation for today. Some of the stuff from last night. Hour number two, we'll get into some football. Stick around. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You're back now, Roto Experts in the Morning. A couple minutes left, now we're number one. And in front of me, I have a list of the longest home runs hit in 2017. Now, you know that Aaron Judge is number one from over the weekend. He had a 496-foot shot.
Right.
You knew that. I want to know how many of the top 10 you can name the rest of the year.
Giancarlo Stanton.
Giancarlo Stanton is not on this list.
What?
Yeah.
Is Aaron Judge on it like seven times?
Just Aaron Judge,
is this
one time.
Is this length you're talking about? Or speed?
Is his length.
Okay.
I can't believe this is the home run
from Stanton was not on there?
I'm about to say that. Yeah, Stanton hit that one over the bat.
Well, then you won for the weekend. Then you could blame your son for not putting him on the list. I don't know.
My son.
Throwing your son under the bus.
He put this list together. Not me. He did. Giancarlo Stanton's not on the list. I don't have to tell you.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Miguel Sano?
No,
he
sir.
He hit that Kyle shot in Target Field.
No, sir.
Kyle Schwarber's not on it?
No, sir.
Damn, I
feel like Scott's going to run down there. What the hell is this list that you put together?
How about Ozuna?
Marcell Ozuna is on the list. A 467-foot shot early May.
George Springer.
George Springer's on this list.
Joey Gallo.
467-foot shot. No Joey Gallo. Corey, do you have any guesses?
Give my son Manny Machado.
Manny Machado, number 10 on the list. That's correct.
How many are we doing?
Top 10. You've gotten 1, 2, 3, 4 of them so far.
Wow. Giancarlo Stanton. Anthony Rizzo?
No, sir.
Is Nomar Mazara?
He's not.
Oh, he had a bomb in center field.
I'm thinking of bombs that I've seen.
What's the dude, son that's played for the Diamondbacks? Oh, that'd be like 1-1 in fantasy. I can't Paul think Goldschmidt? It's that small goal. Paul Goldschmidt,
number 5 on the list at 468.
What about Chris Davis with a K?
Chris Davis is not on the list.
Oh, he hits
neither
long
Chris
home
Davis
runs
is.
Too.
But Paul Goldschmidt's teammate is.
We talking about Jake Lamb?
Bah! 468 feet.
We do love rare tacos.
From the Cubs.
What did you just do?
A bad like you do.
Wow. If I would have done that, you went, why?
You do it all the time. Yeah. You do it all the time.
I know.
Okay.
Stop throwing with me. Okay. No, but you, the first time I did,
oh boy,
the first time
go.
I did it,
here
you were
we
like,
go.
"What did you do?"
Right,
here
well,
we
I understand go. It now. Yeah.
Scott's expected a royalty fee.
Yeah. Yo,
maybe that's what it is.
Crazy.
Anyway, the rest of this list. Number 2 is Chad Pinder.
Oh boy!
Two weeks ago, he hit like two bombs in a game.
Correct. Yeah. 483 was one of them.
Jorge Soler.
How the hell?
That guy's in the minors.
How the hell did you get Jorge Soler? Number 3 on this list, Jorge Soler.
I remember
Soler.
Watching it one night.
Jorge Soler, 470.
I couldn't remember
feet.
What his name was, though. I remember watching it.
That's correct, Jorge Soler. Number 4.
I didn't know he was in the minors, though.
Number 4 is Eric Hosmer at 469, and then Brandon Moss at 1 at 466.
I still can't believe that Gallo's not on this list.
Stanton
I
mean, and Schwarber.
Miguel Sano hit a shot in Target Field to the restaurant in like dead center. How is this guy not on the list?
This list comes from Home Run Tracker, ESPN.
Yeah, no, it's a good site.
Hit Tracker Online gives you the length. Yeah. Giancarlo Stanton's longest was 465. He just missed He just missed the cut.
By the way, did anybody see the foul home run that Edwin Encarnacion hit on Sunday?
Yeah,
That was amazing, that shot. Yeah. He was pretty pissed.
Yes, he was. Also in front of me, by the way, I have average exit velocity. Would you like to guess the top 10 of this?
Okay, Stanton, Judge.
Stanton is not on the list. Judge,
really?
What? Judge
how,
is,
how is Stanton not on this exit velocity list?
Judge is number 2.
We're going to have a sit down.
Edwin Encarnacion?
No, sir. No, sir. You can look at the list.
I'll go with Marcell Ozuna again.
We're just going to end this game. You guys are very terrible at it. That's fine. Number 1 was Miguel Sano.
Let's do name that player.
Name that player. It's coming up in hour number 2. But when we come back, we'll break down the Warriors Championship. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Hour number 2 of the Roto Experts, live here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I feel like I'm shocking the world with my stats here. That's why
they
it's
are
fun,
very
right?
shocking.
That's why it's
I
fun.
I can't believe that Stanton's not on there. Like
average exit velocity 2017, Miguel Sano number 1, Aaron Judge number 2, J.D. Martinez 3.
Yeah, Martinez has been ripping it up.
Jock Peterson 4.
What?
Adam Lind 5. Interesting. There you go.
Jock Peterson.
So there you go. Last night, the Golden State Warriors defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers in 5 games to win their second NBA championship in 3 years. The ending that I think we all saw as inevitable. Officially, the Warriors are the champs.
I mean, the first thing that came to my mind was I kind of feel bad for the OKC fans. They once had a team of Durant, Harden, and Westbrook.
Yeah.
And that could have been, you know, big three. But, you know, I really did feel bad for LeBron in the fact that with the guy averaged a triple-double and his team lost in five games. I still blame him. And like I said, I still blame him. I still blame him for game three, though, for not taking that ball to the hole.
I have, sure. I have a trivia question for the Warriors fan on our panel. Okay. Corey.
Yo.
How many titles have the Warriors won?
Three.
And that's wrong.
Go up.
Go up one.
That's wrong.
Two. They won four.
They won five.
That's wrong.
They won five?
Five. Where did they win the first two? Where were they based?
Oh, boy. That's a good one right there, Scott.
Yeah. You're not a Warriors fan, so I guess you wouldn't
know.
Were
they in New Orleans?
Nope.
That was the Jazz.
That's a good one right there. Where were they at?
Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. So, but since they've been in Oakland, since they've been in the Bay Area, they've won how many?
Three.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
Who is that signature you're talking about?
Rick Barry.
You don't know the history of this team.
Rick Barry is a signature player.
Yeah, you know more about Walt Frazier.
I'm talking about the Golden State Warriors of the Bay Area. Not the Philadelphia Warriors. I don't know nothing about the Philadelphia Warriors.
But yeah. If you were a Warrior fan, you would know that.
No, I don't know nothing about the Philadelphia Warriors. I'm talking about the team that represent the Bay Area. But what I did, it's a whole bunch of stuff from last night. Shout out my man KD. Give a shout out to PG County last night.
I saw that.
Yep. So
she went to Maryland.
You know what he said about that, right? He never got a call from That's Gary crazy. Williams the whole time he was there. Never so got a call annoying. From Gary Williams.
So absurd.
So, and then as far as LeBron James goes, I mean, he's 3-5 in the finals, but he's still
in like the greatest performance on a player.
He solidified himself last year coming back 3-1. Yeah. He'll always have that. That was amazing.
He's always have that. By the way,
maybe the greatest performance ever by a player on a losing team.
Our buddy JP, who we work with, said he was flying to Vegas last night to bet everything he had that LeBron would have over 8.5 rebounds last night.
How many did he end up with?
13.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything he had,
that was
bet
easy
on that.
Money.
He said it was easy. It was the easiest bet. He goes, I will be rich, so I will not see you guys tomorrow. We'll see if JP comes to work today. Just saying. When we come back, we're going to go inside the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football package, which debuts tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss what we have next for you inside the exclusive Edge package. The Roto Experts in the Morning continues on right after this. Today's exclusive Edge article is brought to you by Chris Ventura. Ventura, who, by the way, let's not forget, was in the first mock draft for Roto Experts.
You had a terrible team.
I was not. I'm going to make that very clear.
If you keep it up, he won't be in the next one either.
Chris Ventura was, and he earned his spot by being a part of the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football package, which you will be able to view for the first time in full tomorrow. Very, very excited for our celebration tomorrow as the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football package becomes available for you. You're getting a big discount tomorrow. We're going to be able to give away packages on the show tomorrow. We'll have trivia questions. It's going to be really, really fun. So you're not going to want to miss tomorrow's show. And you're not going to miss getting in early on the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football package. Now, Chris Ventura wrote about some of the undervalued players going into 2017. And to me, you know, the first name on the list is the one that we talked about very much in depth, and that was Devontae Booker. So Chris is on board with us, specifically Corey, how Devontae Booker's not costing you anything right now. And listen, he could be a starting running back in Denver for all we know. So
got him in round, what was that, 17 of the NFFC draft champions I'm in right now? That's nice. A song for a possible starting running back.
And Chris loves it for every reason you're saying it, right? Like, Jamaal Charles may not make this team. CJ Anderson hasn't done anything. Why not Devontae Booker? So we're all on the same page there with Devontae Booker, Chris as well. But then you get one level higher. There's Taylor Gabriel. Interesting. No Kyle Shanahan, but Gabriel last year had this stretch where he was phenomenal. Let me read you a quote from what Chris Ventura had to say. Quote, comparable to Tyreek Hill, Gabriel was an unknown commodity in 2016 until he burst onto the scene about midway through the season and emerged as a big play threat for the Falcons. He's undrafted free agent, so expectations should be restricted. But there's immense upside here.
Speaking of Gabriel, there's a stat, yards per route run, which is becoming kind of like a really big deal.
Yeah.
And there's only two receivers that were higher than him last season, A.J. Green and Julio Jones.
Yeah. See, well, here's the thing with Gabriel. He needs the opportunity. I don't see a player like Gabriel. I think he takes a hit with Kyle Shanahan not being there. Even though it said parts of the passing game is going to be the same, I think he's going to be fantasy relevant at some point during the season because I think Julio is going to be banged up. So, yeah, he should be drafted in a 12-team league. If it's 16 rounds, though, I don't think he's draftable in 16 rounds. If you're doing 16 rounds, I don't think he's draftable. If you're doing a 20-round draft, I think you can get him in that range. But if you're doing 16, I don't see it. He's a player to watch on off the waiver wire.
On yesterday's show, we talked about best ball, right? Like Taylor Gabriel's like the perfect player for a best ball
league. He's a best ball guy.
He's going to go off. And I think given what he did last year, Taylor Gabriel should be drafted. I disagree with you, Corey. In a 12-team league, in 16 rounds, I think given what he did last year, given his big playability, I think he should be drafted.
I don't want to have him as one of my bench players. You're going to need guys.
The problem is, when are you going to want to start Taylor Gabriel?
Oh, I get everything Corey's saying about it. The opportunity is definitely something he needs. But at some point, you're going to reach where you're going to have to throw guys in. You're going to get injuries, or you're going to have those bye weeks. So sometimes it's going to be addition by subtraction and stuff like that. But I think he definitely needs to be drafted.
Scotty, let me ask you this here. I liked Taylor Gabriel because he's a big playability, right? Like what he can do and how lightning quick he is. We talked last week about some of these coaching changes, and Kyle Shanahan's gone. Steve Sarkisian is here. Like that is one of the reasons scaring me away from Taylor Gabriel because I don't know if Sarkisian will be able to utilize Gabriel like Shanahan did.
Here's the issue, though. It's like, you know, you look outside of Julio Jones, and then you can't trust Julio Jones to stay healthy either. You know, who are really the playmakers on this team? And one of them is Taylor Gabriel. This team is still going to throw the ball a heck of a lot. It's still going to be a powerful offense. As good as the running backs are, I think there's going to be a lot of volume there. That's the other part of it is, though, I think we even saw with the Shanahan offense that you can't trust Taylor Gabriel to be consistent on a week-to-week basis. He's kind of like a less decorated Tyreek Hill. So I kind of like him as a wide receiver 4,
sure,
maybe /5. He's going to have some good games, but you can't trust him. But, you know, Matt Ryan's still going to fling the ball.
Okay, so I'll throw it out here like this. Who would you rather have, Taylor Gabriel or Cole Beasley?
Taylor Gabriel.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Taylor Gabriel or
Robbie Anderson.
I was going to say Quincy and Numa. So Taylor Gabriel or Robbie Anderson.
Or the Jets wide receivers.
Yeah. I'd rather have a Numa than Gabriel, but I'd rather have Gabriel than Anderson.
Taylor Gabriel or Kamar Aiken?
I'm taking Taylor Gabriel over
Me
Kamar
too.
Aiken.
I just don't feel like Aiken's role is going to be defined
enough. Third wide receiver in Indianapolis.
Maybe.
Yeah, third Maybe. Wide receiver.
Taylor Maybe. Gabriel... Taylor Gabriel on a team that's going to throw the ball 600 times. Taylor Gabriel or Tyler Lockett?
I'll say Taylor Gabriel.
I also will take Taylor Gabriel there as well.
Yeah. Just as you mentioned,
y'all value him more than I do.
Just as you're mentioning all these guys, just for point of reference, in my RotoWire online challenge, which was 20 rounds, Anunua, Gabriel, and Beasley went within 7 picks of each other.
So that's the right area. I have a couple more because I'm looking at Fantasy Pros right now. Taylor Gabriel, consensus right now, is wide receiver 67. Cole Beasley, just for, so you know, is wide receiver 71. So they're close. I'd rather have Cole Beasley, I think, over Taylor Gabriel. I had Beasley last year. He's just this super duper reliable PPR guy where you're getting 5 for 50 each and every week. And he has a connection with Dak. So, like, I'm definitely taking Cole Beasley personally over Taylor Gabriel. But here's a couple more. I give you a couple guys that were drafted after Gabriel here. Let me give you guys a couple guys before. Let me see what you think. Tyler Lockett, by the way, is 61. Gabriel, 67. Taylor Gabriel or Will Fuller?
That's interesting right there. This quarterback situation in Houston is going to be something to watch, see how Tom Savage plays. Will Fuller has a lot of talent. I think I'd go Gabriel over Fuller.
I go Gabriel.
Yeah, I got Will Fuller. Gabriel was a 12th-round pick. I got him last week in the 16th round. So he's fallen, but this is year 2. If you think they're going to make a step up, I think the other receivers, I think Fuller makes he progresses into year 2, and I'll keep talking Braxton Miller. I think he's an athletic receiver that we haven't really seen anything from that you will see this season.
The next one I have for you is Taylor Gabriel or Josh Doctson.
I got to go Doctson if they're saying he's going to get okay. Pierre Garçon's position and all that. And, you know, he's former number one pick that they are invested in and they seem to want to get out there.
I think both are risks for the inconsistency of Gabriel and because Doctson, you know, basically missing last year, essentially a rookie, does opportunity lead to production? I'm not sure. But, again, like Matt says, I like the role. They have a lot of confidence that they're moving him into that spot. It's a good offense, so I'm going to go Doctson.
I go Josh Doctson.
Okay, last one for you when it comes to Taylor Gabriel. Taylor Gabriel or Kevin White?
I'm going to have to go White. He's done nothing, but just on the – there's targets out there. I think the Bears are going to have to throw with that defense. So, I mean, you got Meredith. I think White – I mean, unless the dark horse in Chicago is Kendall Wright, but nobody's counting on him.
I would go Kevin White because we don't know, and then he could be a number one. Gabriel is not going to be a number one.
This is tough for me.
It's like I don't want to mess with the Kevin White thing because
I don't blame you.
I'm going to go Taylor Gabriel.
All right, fair enough. So the
I got another one if you don't mind.
Yeah,
Greg.
Sure.
Taylor Gabriel or Kenny Stills.
Oh, that was on here also. I skipped that one, actually.
I'll go Taylor Gabriel.
Oh, really?
His quarterback throws downfield. Oh,
this is true.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because I skipped it because I thought Kenny Stills was the obvious answer.
I would say this about Kenny Stills. If you put it in, like, baseball terms, you know when you see, like, home run to fly ball percentage, that's, like, way out of whack.
Right.
That's Kenny Stills' touchdown.
Yeah. Good point. Percentage.
Yeah, Kenny Stills to me is a daily play.
Okay.
I don't even want him on my seasonal team.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there's one more player that Chris Venture wrote about here. That's really interesting. Because I don't think any of us like him. And maybe I'm wrong. Latavius Murray out in Minnesota. Sure. Obviously, they drafted Dalvin Cook. And right now, according to Ventura, Murray is currently sitting somewhere between 25th and 35th RB off the board. Murray is not healthy coming back from that foot injury, foot surgery. But should be back in time for training camp. We'll see. We know how good Latavius Murray was around the goal line last year, double-digit touchdowns, and a lot of that is because of Oakland's fantastic offensive line. Now he goes to a situation where the offensive line isn't nearly as good, and you have to deal with a second-round pick and Dalvin Cook being there with you. Is Latavius Murray, Corey Parsons, someone you want on your team?
He would if Latin Murray's on my team, he would be on my team as a bench, or he would be on my team as a backup to Dalvin Cook if I was to have Dalvin Cook anywhere. Yeah, he is not. I'm not really going to Minnesota to look for fantasy production unless it's Dalvin Cook. Now Dalvin Cook has a storied injury history, so obviously that makes Latin Murray a little bit more valuable coming into this season. But he's nothing special. He's a jag. He's just a guy. You know what I'm saying? He's like what Tony say about Jake, average. You feel what I'm saying? That's who Latin Murray is. You feel what I mean?
I'll make my point about Murray when we come back.
You make your point
I love
about
Jake too, though.
We'll give Matt an opportunity to make his point about Murray, and then we'll throw some running back comparisons out there for you to see what you think about Latavius Murray.
One bites the dust.
This is the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is the Roto Experts. The morning. We'll be back right after this. I was just noticing that the Mr. Freeze.
I wanted to look this up,
too. Yeah, it changes who he is, it looks like. There's different guys that play Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze is Usain Bolt.
That would be awesome if you took off the costume.
I know, right? It's Usain Bolt.
But that kid's face was great. He was like, man, putting his arms
up. It's very, very funny. Good job for Mr. Freeze and its sponsor is Racetrack. That's pretty cool.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
Racetrack, like the gas place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
There's one right across the street from where the stadium is at. How about that?
That makes sense. Hey, Scotty, before we went to break, you won an opportunity to give your thoughts here on Latavius Murray.
You know, a few years ago, I loved Murray when he was at the Raiders because, you know, watching him, you know, he was this big back with speed. Over the last year and a half, I'm like, where is the speed gone? He's... Like Corey said, he's nothing special. It's like This is Latavius Murray. I'm using the microphone here on a football field, and this is like Latavius Murray running. Like, the tacklers just come like, it's just like, he doesn't make it. He's huge. He's plodding, and he doesn't make anybody miss at all. There's nothing special about him anymore except for the fact that he's big.
Yeah, but I mean, Scott does make a point, but if you're drafting Latavius Murray for his role, he's not going to, you know, he's not costing you a high draft pick.
No.
And if you go to Pro Football Reference,
and he likely will be a starting running back at some point this season. Because Cook's not going to play 16.
Well, I think he coexists with Cook in the fact that he's that, you know, small yardage guy, that goal line guy.
Yeah.
Just go look at the touchdowns last year. I mean, he scored 13 of them. 10 of them were like from the water.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what the problem is, though, with Murray, though, too? You talk about the offensive line. Last year, he tentatively searched for holes behind a good offensive line.
Yeah.
Behind a bad one. You know, this guy could be, in any given week, he could be 5 carries for 12 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, no doubt. And then I saw that offense doesn't really fit him. Now, I've seen some highlights of Cooks.
Less touchdowns because it's not a good offense.
I think that offense is better than people. But it's not the Raiders, though.
Cook can play. He's a dynamic player. So I'm not saying hop off of him because he's going to struggle with injuries. But he can play. He's a dynamic player. He's going to make that offense better. But not better enough to where you want to be investing in Minnesota Vikings players. Too many of them that's not named Cook or Thielen or Diggs. I just don't like the situation. They're more mid-round guys a little bit later on. And Latavius Murray, he's a bench player. If he's on your team, he needs to be a bench player. You cannot even attempt to put him in your flex.
I think he's going to score half as many touchdowns as he did last year.
He scored 6 touchdowns. That's a fantasy bench player.
I tell you, I mean, maybe I'm a little more bullish on the Vikings than most. But I kind of like that offense. The offensive line is somewhat improved. Still nowhere near to being great. But I think Bradford showed you one thing. He showed you a couple things last season. I mean, I really like Thielen. I think he is, if you're getting him in the 9th round, I think that's tremendous value. I think he's a really good player. Diggs stays healthy. He's a PPR machine. And you got the tight end connection.
There's a lot of talk about Treadwell, too, now. Well, a lot of people are saying, yo, Treadwell is like, they're like, yo, Treadwell can play.
If Treadwell is like what they're saying, if this kid, that just adds a great dynamic to that team.
Okay, so the offense gets a little bit better with the line, but still the quarterback is Sam Bradford. I'm not a Sam Bradford guy.
I don't think Sam Bradford's
not great. He's not bad.
He wasn't as bad as we all thought last season.
No, he wasn't.
Dink and dunk don't do it for me. I want somebody to dink and dunk.
He's
I want somebody to grab their nuts and throw the ball down the field.
He's not explosive.
The division he plays in is a division you can throw the ball on. You got to take that into consideration. You can throw on those secondaries there. I think Dylan Diggs, the tight end. You got Cook, who's a pass catcher.
Yeah.
I think it's a really it's a much better offense than people think. And when you compare them versus the secondaries in that division, I really like that.
I think Bradford's respectable. I don't think he's dink and dunk. I don't think he's explosive.
But that's what he was doing last year, Scott.
No. I saw him go downfield to Thielen, you know, like several times. It's like he wasn't dinking and dunking. This is not Alex Smith, but he's not an outstanding gunner either. My problem with Diggs is he doesn't get off the jam very well. Defensive backs can be physical with him, and he can disappear for stretches. I'm okay with Bradford as like an NFL quarterback. I'm not a Diggs guy.
How about this?
I'm pinwheeling right quick, Greg. Can you see what his yards per attempt was last year?
How about this? Bradford last season had he led the league with a 71.6 completion percentage. Okay, he doesn't throw downfield.
What was it, 7 yards on attempt?
I'm getting it. In 15 starts, he threw basically 3,900 yards. So you give him another start, he's got 4,000 yards.
On the dot.
He's not that bad. He had 20 touchdowns last season, the 5 interceptions. His role was to, and I'll tell you another thing, his adjusted yards per attempt was 7.3.
That's not good.
Can I ask you a question about Sam Bradford?
He's better than Jameis Winston.
Can I ask you a question?
Jameis throws
Bradford?
The ball down the field. Jameis threw almost 45 yards last year.
Sam Bradford in his entire career had a quality receiving crew? Ever.
Okay, so I'm not, y'all can't talk me into Sam Bradford.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying. All I'm saying is I think he's better and that offense is better than what people think. I'm not telling people to go out and go to war with Sam Bradford as their quarterback. But like I said, in the league I was doing where all these quarterbacks went, and I took Taylor and I didn't take a second quarterback back-to-back, I didn't like the op. It was like it was Andy Dalton with the same buy as Taylor, so I was like, screw that. And I was betting on either I didn't think Wentz would make it back to me, but I was betting at least Bradford would make it back to me. I got Wentz back to me, so I went with Wentz.
No, I don't blame you. I would go with Wentz. I think he has a little bit more of an opportunity. What was Winston per attempt? Sorry, Greg. I'm pinwheeling.
You really are right. James Winston last year per attempt was 7.2.
So the same thing, really.
7.2.
Really?
Yeah, the best, well, the best quarterbacks adjusted. In the league are usually 7 okay. to 8. You know?
Okay. The Jameis Winston adjusted yards was 6.8.
All right. I want to go back to Murray just for a second here. I'm pivoting back.
I'm sorry. We got carried away.
Okay, I just want to know. Would you rather have Latavius Murray or Matt Forte?
I think it's going to be Powell in New York.
Can I pick a wide receiver?
And I think Murray's got a role. I mean, look, I love Matt Forte, but I think, you know, the sun is setting. Maybe I'm wrong. I just hate that. If he went somewhere else besides the Jets and was used more as like a third down back, something like that, the guy, a pass catcher, maybe I like him better.
Would you rather have Latavius Murray or Jonathan Stewart?
Same running back. I'd probably go Jonathan Stewart.
I might go Lat Murray here. I don't like either, but I'll go Lat Murray.
Would you rather have Latavius Murray or Fat Rob?
I go Fat Rob.
I'm going to go Fat Rob as well. He's got a
little confidence there with Fat Rob.
He currently has the starting job. And until that, he's usurped, which probably will happen.
Okay. Would you rather have Latavius Murray or Sam Perine?
I'll take Perine for the upside,
Would you rather have Latavius Murray or the man he replaced, Adrian Peterson?
Lat Murray.
Adrian Peterson.
See, the thing
wouldn't
with
be
Peterson
surprised
is,
to me if he has a few good games this year.
The thing with Peterson is they brought him in there. And to basically, when you have a guy of Mark Ingram's talent, to bring in Peterson at this stage, I got to think they have that Peyton has a plan for him and his hatred for Ingram knows no bounds.
Yeah, and with Murray, I don't see that any upside in terms of yardage. With Peterson, we've seen in the past, the one thing I will remember about Peterson is You try to doubt him, and he will burn you.
Let me read you a line or two from Chris Venture's article here, guys. Chris says that the difference this time that is that Gordon is no competition for a starting job in regards to Melvin Gordon, and we'll see a ton of touches. Murray, on the other hand, might be part of a committee with or even a backup behind Dalvin Cook. Still, Latavius Murray shouldn't be going as long as he is, even if he splits carries with Cook. He should see close to 15 touches a game because the Vikings are built to ground and pound. His value is lower in PPR leagues because Cook is better and more athletic pass catcher, but there's a good chance that Lat Murray will be the go-to goal line back, and that should make him a very useful RB2 in standard formats.
I can't see that guy getting 15 touches a game. It'll bog the offense down.
I don't see where 15 touches come from
look,
either.
They do. If they have a lead, I think it all depends on the game flow with the Vikings. The Vikings with that defense, if they go up 2 touchdowns, I don't really see them airing it out and stuff. And as much as I'm really not a Lat Murray guy, he is going to have a role in this offense.
If you try to run the clock out with Lat Murray, it's going to be a 3-and-out and you're going to punt.
Yeah, I'm more in agreement with Corey, and you know how often in a division like that, like you just specified, maybe gets the Bears, maybe get a 2 touchdown league, but when you're playing the Packers, the Lions, you know, stuff like that, and it tends to more to be shootouts, things like that. I can't see it, and Murray's he's too easy to bring down.
Okay, as terrible as Lat Murray is, he's still averaged at least. He's never averaged under 4 yards a carry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, you're trashing him like he's just total garbage. I think he's better than that. I'm not saying he's somebody that I'm targeting in drafts, but I think he's a better player than
you know. I think to 15 carries a game, you got to be doing more than running out the clock.
It's interesting. I think ultimately, I kind of sit on the sidelines during this argument or conversation, not really an argument. But only because I was trying to like have some sort of perception on Latavius Murray. I don't really feel strongly either way. Like, I could see him on my team at some point. I'm not targeting him at all. You know, for me, Latavius Murray is a guy.
He's a guy. He's an NFL player.
He's a guy that I could see on my bench that I could throw in there that may score a touchdown and get me 10 points in a week. But I never really wanted. The upside there is just limited, I think. And that's
he has seen 96 targets the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think it's just the limited upside that scares me away from Latavius Murray, ultimately. We'll come back. We'll play a little Name That Player. Let's see if Matt can hold on to his lead. Stick around. The Roto Experts in the Morning continues right after this. Back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, my prepared crew of...
I am legally deaf today, so I will take that stance.
And Corey's just getting ready for the show.
Getting ready for the parade.
The parade?
Dub Nation Parade. I'm going out to Oakland.
You're going out to Oakland?
Town
business. Is that in Oakland?
Town, of course. Town business. That's the only team that's in Oakland is the Golden State. Oh, the A's are still in Oakland. Yeah.
So the Raiders.
So they're letting Knicks fans into the Raiders Golden State Parade?
Well, the Raiders are getting ready to leave. The Warriors are actually going across the bridge to San Francisco. And after a while, the only team going to be there is the A's. Mm. So, town business.
They let Knicks fans into the Golden State Parade?
Yeah, they yeah. Uh-huh.
Nice.
I just somehow we got Lefty Lopez and I looked at Andre Rison. Now I found out that Andre Rison's son, Hunter Rison, plays for the Michigan State Spartans.
Oh, okay.
All right.
There you go. So he's coming up.
Just
Andre Bad Moon Rising.
That's right. Just a random train of thought there. All right, let's get the Name That Player, gentlemen, shall we?
A great NFL highlight is when Deion Sanders playing for the 49ers. He picked that pass off when he went to the crib. In the Georgia Dome, like when he first became a Niner, Deion Sanders was the man.
He was he doesn't get enough credit. We always go to Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
Deion was pretty amazing.
Absolutely. All right, let's hit the music. Let's go to Name That Player. If I remember correctly, Matty Modica, you, sir, have 2 points. Corey, the Fantasy Executive Parson, he has 1 point. Scotty will try to get on the board today.
Scotty Goose.
Here we go. I am 23 years old.
Greg Sussman.
I wish I was 23.
He deserves a half a point.
I wish I was 23. That'd be pretty tight.
23.
I'm a former third round draft pick. I am not from Texas because I'm from Mississippi, where I also went to school.
He's a fourth round.
Marcus Mariota.
Is Marcus Mariota at the school in Oregon? Is from Hawaii.
I don't watch college football.
Not 23. No,
he's from Hawaii. Last year was the first year of my career that I did not play in 16 games. It was also the least amount of yards and receptions that I've had in my entire career. However,
Jordan Matthews.
It is not Jordan Matthews.
That's a good shot, though, but he's not 23.
However, I did have a career high in touchdowns.
23.
Touchdown dependent, SEC, 23 years old.
The other starting wide receiver on my team was also a third round pick.
It's a good one right here.
Calvin Benjamin?
It is not Calvin Benjamin. He's at School of Florida State.
Yep. Tallahassee.
And it was a first-round pick. Last year, I finished as wide receiver 75.
Ugh.
Is this Dante Moncrief?
Ring the bell for Matty Modica!
Nice job, Modica. Dante Moncrief.
Dante Moncrief.
That's very good. Very good right there.
Last year, finished as wide receiver 75. This year, going off the board as wide receiver 28 and 65 overall.
You got to like that red zone action. He got a lot of red zone love from Andrew Luck last year. You're talking about a post-hype sleeper. I didn't know he was only 23 years old.
Yes, sir.
You're talking about a classic post-hype sleeper. Everybody was on him last year to be this breakout guy. Shoulder injury, obviously, really, really affected what he was able to do, but you still saw he got love in the red zone. If I'm not mistaken, he scored 9 touchdowns last year.
Last year, Dante Moncrief had 7 touchdowns.
7 touchdowns. He played in 9 games.
9 games.
So he was, obviously, that was somebody that Andrew Luck was targeting. This year, we see those receptions go up. If he can stay healthy, he could, the player that we thought he was going to become last year, he could very well be that this year. So you got to like Dante Moncrief.
Fully unleashed as a downfield guy. We know he can catch in the red zone and do his little guitar celebration.
I love the guitar celebration.
Which is very cool.
He's got his favorite player.
Yeah. They going to the Air Guitar Nationals.
Yeah, I think we have yet to see him unleash fully as a downfield force, so I like him.
Would you rather own Dante Moncrief or Julian Edelman?
Oh, Dante Moncrief. I can't fool with
Julian Edelman. Dante Moncrief.
Dante Moncrief. These are all pretty obvious to me. All right. I don't really have another one, so I'm just going to move on. Yeah. All right. 3 points for Matt Modica. A point for the fantasy executive. Scotty, still trying to get on the board here. I am a former 7th round draft pick.
Name popped into my head who doesn't even play anymore.
So that's probably wrong.
Yeah, Marcus Colston.
Yeah,
you were thinking that too.
I am currently 27 years old.
27.
Mike Florio.
That was a great year, 27.
I am from California, but went to school in Nevada.
27. Went to school.
Last year was the second year of my career that I played in 16 games. It was also by far the most productive year of my career as I led my team in yards and touchdowns.
It's LeGarrette Blount.
It is not LeGarrette Blount.
That was a good guess, though.
I had 9 touchdowns last season.
That would have been LeGarrette Blount. Been.
And 945 yards receiving.
9 touchdowns and 945 yards receiving.
There is not another 7th round pick on the other side of me.
Could this be Jamison Crowder?
It is not Jamison Crowder.
Terrell Pryor?
It is not Terrell Pryor.
Duke.
There is not another Pro Bowler in my wide receiving core. I am also not a Pro Bowler, by the way.
9 touchdowns.
I finished last year as wide receiver 22.
Ooh, he was in the conversation. That sounds. Is this
Rishard Matthews?
It is Rishard Matthews. Rishard Matthews finished last year as wide receiver 22. Off the board this year, he is wide receiver 37.
Well, Corey Davis is there now.
I understand. That's the next clue.
Yeah, and you feel like Corey Davis is going to take over and be the number one wide receiver in that offense from day one. And then the way Matthews was used last year, they took shots with him down the stretch. He was very efficient. He didn't rack up a bunch of targets, but he was very efficient. When they got, he was used very. They similar to how the Skins used Jamison Crowder. It's how he was used in the offense. They get outside.
I like Jamison Crowder.
Yeah, we do. You get outside the third. You get on the other half of the field inside that 30-40 yard range. Marcus Mariota was throwing the football down the field to Rishard Matthews. He was catching them in the end zone. I like him. I'll put him on teams probably in that Cam Meredith type range right there where he's going.
Do you know how many
as a wide receiver 3?
Do you know how many targets Rishard Matthews had last year?
What is he at 70 something?
70 something. What do you think? Targets for Rishard Matthews last year.
I'm probably in the same range. 75.
I'll go low 80s.
108.
Yeah, 108 targets.
108 targets.
Here's the
last
thing.
Year.
With Corey Davis coming in, Corey Davis is a big play type. They're still going to use Rishard Matthews on a lot of key passing downs, a chain mover, somebody that he trusts. Delanie Walker and Rashard Matthews are the chain movers in this offense.
Well, I'll give you a couple of guys that are going like in that ninth round range.
Rashard Matthews always been
an Adam Thielen or Rashard Matthews to me is a great pick. If you go in end of the eighth, somewhere in the ninth, those are two receivers.
Let me make this very simple. I feel like third and seven, he looks for Matthews.
Would you rather have in 2017 Rashard Matthews or Corey Davis?
Rashard Matthews.
Corey Davis.
I'll take the veteran over the rookie.
Currently going back to back according to Fantasy Pros.
See, wait a minute. He had 108 targets. He had 65 catches.
Correct.
He's got to do better than that.
That's not that terrible.
That's not always the receiver's fault either.
That's not that terrible. You know, what is that, like 60%? I mean, there's a lot of these top receivers that have 50% sure. just above. Oh, that's a good one. I mean, I'll probably have to go with... I want to say Corey Davis, but I think Rashard Matthews is the right move.
So you want to say Corey Davis, but you think Matthews is the move?
Is the right pick.
Okay. Rashard Matthews or his ex-teammate, Devontae Parker?
Rashard Matthews.
Rashard Matthews.
I got to bloop. I mean, I got to see it first with Parker.
You're hoping Parker scores 975 yards.
The problem, so it's interesting. The problem with Rashard Matthews and drafting him is going to be that, like, he's just the unsexiest pick ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. And you're going to draft him, and you're like, ugh. But he's productive.
But then you're going to get some numbers.
And you'll get some numbers.
Well, you got to think now. No, teams are going to focus.
I'm telling you, this is a guy that you're going to be able to get later.
Well, the focus is going to go on Corey Davis now, too.
He is going to be a guy that you can get late because nobody's going to want this guy. And as proven, given the numbers, 108 targets last year.
His quarterback is going to look for him.
And another guy that's going to benefit in this offense, too, is Delanie Walker. Everybody's going to, you know, people, you know, he just gets it done every season. I know
they're still
going to
run a hell of a lot, though, too.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think they're abandoning that. That's why I don't have Mariota as high as other people do. I think Mariota is really good.
I agree with you.
Yeah, the most targets on the team last year. Could have fooled me. Did fool me.
Does it change your opinion on Rashard Matthews at all?
I'm still going Corey Davis.
Okay. All right. Next.
His name's Corey.
I got one last.
That'd be crazy.
Excellent analysis.
And one last name that player for you. It's probably the easiest one we've had over the last 2 days. A little Matt dominated. But we're going to do that on the other side of our final break of the day.
I believe they call that a tease.
That's exactly what that's called. That's in radio as a tease. Hey, Corey, speaking of teases, what's up next on the OGs?
Coming up on OGs, we'll look back at yesterday, talk about Mike V and his performance on our little fantasy broadcast competition. Plus, Matt Madika's going through an NFFC draft right now. Some real interesting results. We'll break it down with myself, George Kurtz, and Madika, talk about that. And we'll get you ready for the rock stars of On Target Fantasy.
There you go. When we come back, one final name that player on this Tuesday morning. Stick around. The Roto Experts in the Morning wraps up right after this. Final couple minutes of the program. One last name that player for you. Matt Modica has dominated this one. But I think this is a nice, easy one for Scotty to get. I am a former first round draft pick. First round pick. I am currently 33 years old. That could be enough. I am from Minnesota.
Larry Fitzgerald?
There it is!
There you go.
I wasn't sure because I thought he was 34.
Just like that. From Minnesota, went to school in Pennsylvania. I finished last year as wide receiver 11. And this year, I'm going off the board wide receiver 25.
Didn't he lead in receptions?
He did.
He led the league in receptions last year.
And look, this guy is still, it might be his last year, but he's still very, very good. Very, very quick. Great rapport with his quarterback. Still a very outstanding PPR guy.
I would have loved to have seen him if he had like a Joe Montana, sure. Dan Marino.
He's changed his game over the years, and you know, still one of the great possession guys who also has quickness too.
One of the great playoff runs either. Yeah. From when they Arizona made the Super Bowl, he was phenomenal.
Easy Hall of Famer.
Here's the thing about it. He gets overlooked, undervalued.
Because people just look at the age.
Exactly.
But and you he's put not him, the big play guy he was early in his
if
career.
If you could put him in the, on changed. Your team as a flex, the offense in Arizona, they give the football to two people, Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson.
Yeah, there's nobody else really reliable.
Now,
there.
You said have him as a flex. He's wide receiver 26 here off the board.
Mm-hmm.
That is a clear wide receiver 3.
Mm-hmm.
On a flex.
He's going in the fourth, fifth round of draft.
How many touchdowns did he catch last year?
Well, he seems to drop off in the second half.
He does.
Yeah, that is true.
He gets tired.
That is true.
How many TDs did he have?
Just to make a point on Fitzgerald, going back to my Roto-Wild and one, I went 4 receivers. Fitzgerald went in the 5th.
6 touchdowns.
I didn't take him. But I would not have a problem as him as
that's
first.
The only thing. He doesn't score very often, so you know it's that kind of help hold him back. But you know he does everything else.
Who would you rather have, Larry Fitzgerald or Golden Tate?
Golden Tate. For this season, I'm going Golden Tate.
I'm going Larry Fitzgerald.
I'll take Golden Tate and those targets that are available that Anquan Boldin has left.
I'll go Larry Fitzgerald.
I'll go Larry Fitzgerald.
No, I mean, I'm sorry. I'll go Golden Tate.
I'll get Larry Fitzgerald. I'll probably get 3 more touchdowns.
I'll go Larry Fitzgerald or Dante Moncrief.
Ooh,
that's a tough one right there.
Moncrief hasn't quite shown me yet.
At that point, it's going to be roster construction for me.
I'll go Fitzgerald in a PPR, Moncrief in a standard.
I'm probably going to have to go Fitzgerald in a PPR. I got to go with Fitzgerald.
I got to take. I mean, I'm taking T.Y. Hilton in the top 5 if I can. You feel what I'm saying? So. I gotta take Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald be a nice number 2 compliment.
He's the number 1 wide receiver in Arizona, and Moncrief is the number 2 in Indianapolis.
Larry Fitzgerald or Jarvis Landry?
Larry Fitzgerald.
Real quick from Scotty.
I'm probably gonna go Jarvis Landry.
I'm gonna go Jarvis Landry.
Fitzgerald will give me more 2 to 3 more touchdowns.
Last one, Larry Fitzgerald or Tyreek Hill?
Larry Fitzgerald, more consistent.
Fitzgerald, depending on the team, depending on roster construction.
Yeah, I mean, Tyreek Hill, though, is probably going to be like a 3rd-round pick at some point.
Corey.
He's just climbing, Corey, man.
How do you construct your roster?
Yes, roster.
Yeah. Strictly Roots, Larry Fitzgerald.
Greg don't like that.
seems like an apropos way to end the program.
You should see what he was doing earlier today. You would not have liked that.
As long as Scott's having fun, it's all that matters, right, Scotty?
I love you.
That's going to do it for us today here on the Road to Experts in the Morning. For Matt Modica, for Scott the King Angle, and for the fantasy executive Corey Parson, my name is Greg Sussman. The OGs, the old school fantasy hour, is up next with Modica Parson and George Kurtz. Tomorrow, we celebrate the Exclusive Edge package making its debut in 2017. Please join us. Have a fantastic rest of your Tuesday, and we'll see you tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Eastern. Bye-bye.